Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying video, I am giving you two terrifying stories in the country of New Zealand. A special shout out to the author, One More Nightmare. He also has a YouTube channel. His link will be in the description box down below if you want to check him out. Now, let's get spooky. The sun sat high in the New Zealand sky as the bus rumbled into a small, picturesque town nestled between the Southern Alps and Lake Wanaka. I was waiting eagerly at the station for Tony and Carrie, two friends I met while I was working in Australia over 12 years ago. We had instantly hit it off, quickly becoming a tight trio of friends and doing everything together. Even when Tony and Carrie took their relationship to the next level, and I became the dreaded third wheel, our bond stayed strong. I had moved back to New Zealand just over a year ago for work and family, and we had kept in touch with weekly Zoom calls and WhatsApp messaging. Though over time I had noticed that our Zoom calls became shorter and the gaps between our messages longer. That's why when they told me they had planned to come over for a holiday, I practically jumped around my lounge room in excitement, tears literally welling up in my eyes. The bus pulled up to the stop, hissing as it lowered to the curb before the doors folded open. I lifted my large handwritten sign, accompanied with their enlarged passport photos that said, "Welcome back to prison, Tony and Carrie." A little jab at Australia's convict history. A few other passengers disembarked first, pointing at my sign with a smile on their face, as if they were in on the joke, before Tony and Carrie came down the stairs and out the door, immediately cracking up at the sign. "Oh, come on, bro," Tony said in his bad Kiwi accent he had used when we first met. What? This is how we welcome all Aussies in New Zealand. That's if you're allowed off the plane, of course," I replied, smiling ear to ear. "Give us a hug, you bloody wombat," Carrie said, dropping her bag and reaching out. I threw the sign to the side and gave Carrie a hug, before breaking away to slap hands with Tony and pulling him in for a hug as well. I grabbed Carrie's bag, and we headed off to the car park, chatting away just like old times. "Wow, that lake, that view is really nice," Carrie had said as we drove up the hill towards my place. The lake stretched out beside us, reflecting the blue sky and surrounding mountains. The pristine waters and lush greenery seemed to go on forever.
"It's massive," Tony added.
"Yeah, it is. It's like nearly four times the size of Loch Ness and even deeper. And it's not even the biggest lake in New Zealand," I said. So glad I finally got to show off the amazing views I got to see every day. We pulled up to my place, unloaded the car, and ate. As the evening settled in, we found ourselves in the backyard, lounging in a covered bubbling hot tub with drinks in hand. Laughter echoed as we reminisced about some of the crazier things we were up to in Australia. The hours passed by effortlessly, and before we knew it, it was 2:30 in the morning. "Right, guys, we should get an early-ish start tomorrow," I slurred. "Time to hit the sack. No funny business, okay? They're brand new sheets in there."
"No worries, we'll just use your couch," Tony said dryly as he slowly climbed out of the hot tub.
"Shut up, Tony," Carrie said, hitting him on the arm as I laughed. "Don't worry, Tony will be asleep before his head hits the pillow."
"Ah, and don't forget, It's a duvet over there, not a doona.
Right you are. Now where are my bloody thongs?
Yandles, mate, yandles. Unless you are wearing Carrie's underwear again. We all laughed again as I pulled the lid over the hot tub, switching off the lights and headed inside for the night. The next day started a little later than planned. Slightly hungover, possibly still drunk, we managed to attach the trailer to the car and load ourselves full of coffee. About 2 hours later than planned, we were finally on the road. Our destination was an abandoned campsite near the top end of the Lake Winoka, just under an hour's drive away. The plan was to park in the abandoned campsite, unload the three kayaks on the trailer, and then kayak across the lake to a secluded cove with a sandy beach. The only access to the beach was by boat or kayak, and almost no one knew about it. There we could swim, relax, cook up a feed, and have a hair of a dog, what my Aussie mates would say about having a drink the next day to get rid of the hangover.
Is this Lake Winoka too?
Carrie asked as we drove beside a large lake on our right. Nah, this one's Lake Hawi. It runs next to Lake Winoka, I replied, glancing out the window at the massive body on water beside us.
Wow, was all she replied.
30 minutes later, we pulled up to the turnoff to the campsite. Blocking the gravel road were a few orange road cones and temporary fencing. I pulled over, putting the car in park and unclipping my seatbelt. Come on, Tony. Gonna need your help with this. Without asking any questions, he jumped out of the car and followed me to the fence. Here, move these cones, then let's make this a big enough gap to squeeze the car and trailer in, I said, grabbing the first cone and moving it aside. Roger, Tony replied, grabbing the other cone. Once he had moved the temporary fence enough to get the car through, Tony said, I'll wait here and move it back once you're in. Sweet, sounds good, I said as I jogged back to the car. There wasn't much traffic around, as this end of Lake Winoka was largely uninhabited, and tourists generally stayed in the towns nearby the bottom of the lake. So I was confident no one would see us. Still, I didn't want to muck around in case some Karen or Ken drove past and reported us. I drove through the gap that we made and waited while Tony moved the cones and fence back, then began the short drive to the campsite area. The site itself was basic. A toilet block, the only building, surrounded by camping spots for tents and caravans.
Why is this place closed? Carrie asked as we pulled up next to the toilets.
Apparently a couple of years back, a bunch of campers went missing overnight. Their tents, cars, all that were still here, and their chairs were all sitting around a burnt-out fire pit, but they were gone. Police searched for weeks. Scuba teams came in, but they couldn't find any trace of them, I replied.
Bull crap,
Tony snorted, waiting for me to crack a smile or laugh. His smile disappeared as he read my face, seeing I was telling the truth.
That's crazy. How did they not find them?
Carrie said.
I don't think people realize how huge this lake is. If they ended up in the water and drowned, you would never be found unless they wash up on shore one day.
Well, just as well we know what we're doing then, Tony said, the smile returning to his face. Do we though? I replied sarcastically, opening my door and stepping out into the bright sun. After storing our supplies in the kayaks, we ran through a quick safety briefing of our sit-in kayaks, making sure the spray skirts fit well, and did a couple of dry, wet exit refreshers. Once we launched the kayaks into the lake and checked each other's spray skirt was attached properly, with the grab loop on the outside,
we began our journey across the water, steering ourselves towards the beach cove known only by locals. I had switched my normal prescription glasses for prescription sunnies, knowing how intense the glare bouncing off the water this time of day would be. I tossed up bringing my normal pair with me as well, but I worried if I somehow lost both I would be unable to drive safely later. While I am far from blind without them, my sight is blurry, and in the evenings it's hard for me to see the road without them. The kayaks glided effortlessly, responding to the subtle shifts of our bodies as we steered. There was a sense of unity with the water, a connection that heightened our awareness of the natural world. The rhythmic sound of our paddles slicing through the water created a soothing melody that harmonized with the gentle lapping of waves against the kayak's hull. For the longest time, we didn't talk, just paddled, taking in the sight of our surrounding landscape until we neared the halfway point of our journey.
"This is amazing," Tony said, breaking the sounds of the lapping waves.
I was about to agree with him when I felt my kayak drop suddenly, as though there was a substantial shift in the water beneath me. My heart skipped a beat as I looked around, skimming my eyes across the surface of the water as the kayak rocked violently from side to side. The others hadn't noticed, their focus elsewhere as they paddled on slowly. Without warning, I felt the water move again on the left side, dropping the kayak quickly and violently. I tried to use the paddle to support my balance, but I was too slow and helpless as I felt the kayak flip. The abrupt immersion into the cold, clear water of the lake sent a shockwave through my senses. The cold water enveloped me, seizing my breath and causing an instant jolt of awareness. The unexpected flip of the kayak sent me into a whirl of splashes and disorientation, the sound muffled in my new underwater environment. In the process of flipping, I lost grip of my paddle and my glasses flew from my face. Instantly, though, my experience kicked in as I cleared my head. I first reached for my grab loop, just to make sure it was there and ready if I needed to do a wet exit. It was. I reached to the underside of the kayak, which was now facing the sky, and banged on it with both handles 3 times before rubbing my hands up and down the underside of the kayak. This alerts the others if they hadn't already noticed my current predicament, so they hopefully turn and paddle quickly to me. Once they hit my kayak, I grab theirs and use it to pull myself out of the water. This prevents me from having to exit the kayak and potentially losing all my supplies. As I continued to rub my hands up and down the kayak's heel, my mind shifted to the reason the kayak had flipped in the first place. I swear it had felt like something large had displaced the water, causing my imbalance. But this was New Zealand. The largest things we get in our lakes are trout and eels, neither large enough to rock a kayak, let alone tip one. I glanced down into the depths below. My heart rate increased, the darkness and opacity of the lake's depths creating an ominous atmosphere, sparking my imagination with thoughts of hidden creatures and submerged unknowns. The profound stillness added to the eerie ambience, as if the lake was holding its breath, keeping its secrets shrouded in the depths. My hands continued rubbing, faster now, more desperate. I continued surveying the dark abyss when suddenly a movement 30 meters below caught my eye. A greenish, shimmer-like reflection grabbed my attention, as it looked like something gliding through the water, almost like a shark would. Suddenly, my kayak was rocked by a huge bang, and I realized Tony or Carrie had come to my assistance.
I took one last quick glance back down to where I thought I had seen the movement only moments ago, but was again greeted by just a dark, empty abyss. I grabbed the bow of the kayak that had come to my aid and flipped myself up, my hands slipping slightly as I almost toppled back over, before fully righting myself and sucking in a huge breath of air.
"Are you all right?"
Carrie asked, genuine concern in her voice. I sucked in a few more mouthfuls of air, wiping my face with my hand before using both hands to clear my hair from my forehead and eyes.
"Yeah, thanks. I lost my glasses, but aside from that, I'm good now,"
I replied, heart rate slowly returning to normal.
"Looks like you lost my respect, too," Tony chimed in with a smirk as he paddled over with my paddle lying across his lap.
"Not that you had much to begin with."
"Yeah, well, I'm more devastated about the glasses. At least they were something I wanted to keep,"
I replied jokingly, grabbing my paddle off him as he got close.
"But thanks for getting this for me."
"All good. What actually happened there? You nod off or something?" he asked.
"Are you sure you're all good?"
Carrie chipped in.
"Yeah, I'm good. I think it was just a small rogue wave caught me off guard,"
I lied.
"Let's get moving. I need to warm up again."
I started paddling, not waiting for an answer. To be honest, I just wanted to get to land as soon as possible to process everything that had just happened. While the movement in the depths below could be passed off as me just imagining things, whatever had caused the water to move so violently was harder for me to process. We continued paddling, eventually reaching the hidden cove with the private sandy beach. Beers were cracked open, tunes played, and a fire crackled as we relaxed in the seclusion of the untouched paradise. Tony and I kicked a rugby ball around for a bit, though he kept trying to handball it to me like an AFL player.
"None of that here, mate. You're in rugby land now," I joked.
"Righto, mate. That's the one where the big blokes just run into each other, yay? Lots of skill there,"
he replied, always ready with a smartass response.
"Nah, it's the one where the players actually have to catch the ball and not fumble it around on the ground like a game of hockey without sticks," I shot back. We continued the joke around, kicking and passing the ball. Carrie got involved too, as we sank a few more drinks and ate the packed food we had brought with us. The day passed by, and soon it was evening. There was still plenty of light left in the day, but the sun was now over the mountains that surrounded us, casting shadows over the water. Reluctantly, we packed up and began the journey back across the lake. The summer evening was still warm, although in the middle of the lake with no direct sunlight, the cold air coming off the water sent a shiver through me. We paddled on, my sight a little blurry from the fact I had no glasses on as well as the booze in my system. That is why when I first thought I saw the green tingled fin break the water behind me, I thought it was just a wave cresting in the lake. It wasn't until it was much closer that I realized it was something much more terrifying. It moved with such grace, rising up and down as it sliced through the water towards us. Once it was closer, I could see it was webbed and seemed to be at least 3 to 4 feet tall. Then it submerged maybe 20 feet behind me. The whole time my voice had been caught in my throat, not quite believing what I was seeing. I felt my kayak drop again as the thing passed beneath me at tremendous speed. I opened my mouth to scream and warn the others, but it was too late. The water exploded around Tony's kayak, spraying up 20 feet in the air or more. Through the wall of water,
we saw a scaly, green-gray clawed hand reaching up and grabbing Tony's kayak, pulling it underwater in an instant. Shock paralyzed us for a moment before Tony's kayak shot back out of the water, landing upside down. I paddled furiously towards the kayak as Carrie started screaming. As I got closer, I noticed large tears in the hole and, more horrifyingly, blood in the water. I pulled up to the kayak and dropped my paddle into the water, grabbing at Tony's kayak, desperately trying to flip it over. I wish I hadn't. When it finally flipped over, the black spray skirt was still attached to the kayak. Tony, however, had been ripped in half. His legs and lower half of his torso still in the kayak, intestines and organs slipping over the edge and into the water. His upper half was completely gone. Carrie screamed even louder at the sight, and I gagged as parts of Tony's intestines slid over my hand holding the kayak. "Go, Carrie, now! Paddle for the shore!" I screamed. The water broke again, and through the watery explosion, I saw what looked like a reptile-like sea creature burst out of the water, landing on Carrie's kayak and dragging her under. Her scream was instantly cut off as the wall of water came splashing back down. Panic set in, my fight or flight activated, and I started paddling with all my strength, not looking back as I heard what I assumed to be Carrie's kayak shooting back out of the water. I paddled furiously, tears welling up in my eyes, lungs burning from intensity. I heard water breaking behind me, the sound of something breaching the water, giving chase. I pushed on harder, my hands hurting as my grip intensified on the paddles, blisters forming and tearing. Then, to my side, a dark shadow below the surface of the water moved with purpose, before disappearing into the depths. Suddenly, my kayak was hit from below, sending me flying in the air. My paddle flew from my hands as I lifted 10 feet, maybe more, in the air. I braced for impact, slamming into the water at speed. I found myself submerged, surrounded by bubbles. Frantically flailing about, I saw a flash of a green eye in the water right below as something huge moved towards me. Before everything went black, and I passed out. I awoke on the shore of the Boundary Creek campsite, disoriented and alone. My kayak and all my belongings, including my phone and car keys, were nowhere to be found. Slowly, I made my way back to the road where I flagged down a passing car. The occupants, a Maori husband and wife, listened intently to what I could recall as they drove me to the nearest town. Their expressions darkened as I recounted the events. I was sure they wouldn't believe me, or worse, would think I was crazy. But after a moment of solemn silence, the husband spoke.
"Sounds like a Tunifa."
He explained that Tunifa was a mythological creature in the Maui folklore, often associated with bodies of water. They were said to be shape-shifting guardians or protectors, but crossing paths with them could bring misfortune. The wife nodded in agreement, emphasizing the significance of the encounter. My friends' bodies and kayaks were never recovered. The police initially accused me of killing them and hiding their bodies and belongings, and tried to elicit a confession from me, but with no evidence, eventually let me go. I sold my property and moved as far from water as I could, which in New Zealand is very hard to do. I don't know if it was the Tunifa,
or if it was some other undiscovered deep water creature, but I do know this. I will never go in the water again as long as I live. There are things here in the New Zealand lakes. Things that kill. They came for us in the blizzard. Only a few of us survived. I still remember the blizzard in Willow Creek Trailer Park. I was one of the residents who had grown accustomed to the harsh winters of this remote mountain town. But that year, the blizzard was unlike any storm we had ever experienced. It was colder, fiercer, and it brought something with it. Something evil. The blizzard was unrelenting, with no signs of stopping. The wind and snow were so fierce that it was impossible to see more than 50 meters, probably less. Even the strongest of the residents were struggling to cope with the extreme cold. The temperature had plummeted to dangerous levels, and our trailers were not built to handle such extreme weather. We rugged up as much as we could and hoped it would be over soon. But after 5 days, the blizzard had not died down. If anything, things seemed worse. It soon became apparent that we were ill-prepared for such a prolonged storm. Our food and water supplies were running low, and we were forced to ration what little we had left. Some of those in the neighboring trailers had already run out of food a day or two ago, and I, along with some of the other residents, had shared some of what little we had. To make matters worse, the blizzard had knocked out power and communication lines, and we were completely cut off from the outside world. The trailer park generators were old, but well maintained. They should be able to get us through this, I thought to myself, as I and some others worked on firing them up. It was a frightening feeling, though, knowing that we were all alone and isolated. The park's next neighbor was only 2 kilometers away, but in this blizzard? A few of us had decided to meet in Tony's trailer, which was one of the larger ones, to discuss what we should do if the blizzard continued at this rate.
I think we gotta have to try to make it to town. Ain't no one coming to us, Tony said, not even trying to hide his anger at the authorities for seemingly abandoning us.
Don't be stupid. You won't even make it to the park's front gate in this.
Margaret, Tony's neighbor, had replied. Tony took a sip of his hot tea, thinking of a reply while the wind and snow battered the side of the trailer.
She's right, Tones. Hell, I live 20 meters from your trailer and I almost got turned around out there. Snow's too deep to drive, and you couldn't see the tip of your nose in that, Mike added.
Tony grunted, more in annoyance than agreement, but didn't say any more. We spent the next few hours together, drinking hot tea and coffee and playing board games. We agreed that we would help each other out, and the others in the trailer park, as much as we could. No one wanted to talk about what happened if this blizzard didn't die down soon, but I am sure we were all thinking about it.
I think I'm going to call it a night. Thanks for the tea, I said as I started buttoning up the top buttons on my jacket.
Yeah, us too,
Margaret said, standing up in unison with her husband, John. With that, Mike, Sue, and Phil also stood to leave, nodding and thanking Tony for having them over. Then Tony's generator cut out. Sue emitted a dark shriek of fear as the trailer was suddenly engulfed in thick darkness. Just as I had reached the door, the power went out, and I could see through the small window the lights in the neighboring trailers flickering out one by one in the midst of the blizzard, like blown-out candles. And outside was now nearly pitch black, and the inside somehow even darker. After a minute or so, a faint glow illuminated the interior of Tony's trailer home, as a few of the guests had pulled out their mobile phone and switched on their flashlight. The light created flickering shadows around the room and failed to fully penetrate the corners, but it was still a relief nonetheless. Mike, who was next closest to the door, started to move towards the door and reached for the handle.
"No, don't," I said quickly, grabbing his arm and pulling it away.
"Hey, what the—"
he started to say, but stopped himself as he watched me lock the door and put my finger to my lips.
"Something's not right," I whispered.
"All the generators can't just cut out like that. We need to be quiet and listen." We all stood there in silence, listening to the howling wind outside and the creaking of the trailer. It was then that we heard a faint tapping on the window. We all turned to look, but it was too dark to see anything outside.
"Is anyone out there?"
Margaret called out, her voice trembling. There was no response. Only the tapping grew louder and more consistent. It was then that we saw the shadows outside the window, moving and shifting in the blizzard. It was clear that someone or something was out there, trying to get in. That's when Margaret repeated,
"Is anyone out there?"
Only her voice came from outside the trailer. I spun my head to look at Margaret, and in the dimly lit room, I saw the blood drain out of her face, eyes wide in terror. Someone, something, had mimicked her voice perfectly. We stood, frozen in place, not making a sound.
"Is anyone out there?"
Margaret's voice again from outside the trailer. Margaret made a whimpering sound and collapsed into John's arms as her legs turned to jelly.
"Is there anyone out there?"
This time, the voice had dropped pitch. It was still her voice, but sounded more menacing.
"Is there anyone out there?" Bang.
We all jumped in fright as something slammed against the door. Bang. This time the door buckled a little. Now more knocking and tapping all around us, every window, every wall. Bang. A third loud hit against the door.
Tony whispered urgently, "We need to barricade the door. Quick, find anything you can to block it."
We sprang into action, grabbing whatever we could find. Chairs, tables, even the board games we had been playing earlier. We worked frantically, our hearts racing with fear as the banging on the door grew louder and more insistent. Finally, we had piled enough furniture against the door to make it difficult for anything to get through. Tony quickly gestured for us to move to the back of the trailer, away from the door. We stumbled over each other in the darkness, trying to get to the back of the trailer as quickly as possible. The tapping and banging on the door, window, and walls continued, growing more frantic by the second. We could hear other sounds now, too. Low, guttural growls and snarls that seemed to be coming from multiple sources. We huddled in the darkness, listening to the sounds outside, afraid to move or make a sound. Then suddenly, it stopped. It was peaceful outside, except for the sound of the blizzard. As we listened, we could hear the distant sound of other voices, those of our neighbors. We cautiously approached the windows and peered outside. Despite the rapidly falling snow, we could observe shadowy figures near the adjacent trailers, contorting in unnatural ways. With their jerky movements and hunched postures, they beckoned to our neighbors.
"No, don't open the doors,"
I heard myself whisper
as I watched in horror as they did exactly that. Through the darkness and the snow, we watched in horror as the figures ripped the doors open and dived into the trailers amidst screams of terror.
No,
I heard Margaret whimper as we were left to sit helplessly and listen to the deafening screams of men, women, and children echoing out all over the trailer park. This was the longest night of my life. I can't say for certain when the final scream was heard, maybe around 3 or 4 in the morning. Overcome with terror, sadness, and exhaustion, we dozed in and out of sleep. One by one, we woke to an unusual stillness that had been absent for a week. The blizzard had finally subsided, and the sun was peering through the last of the clouds. We took our time, but eventually made our way to the windows. Looking outside, we saw the park and all the trailers blanketed in layers of snow and our neighbors, standing in the snow, staring at our trailer. Their faces contorted into a sinister, unnerving grin that betrayed a hunger rather than happiness. We fled the trailer. Certainly they would chase us down, they who had replaced our neighbors. But they didn't. They just watched us flee, standing in the snow, with the terrifying grins plastered on their faces. We never returned to the trailer park. We abandoned the little we owned, and now all have a share unit 2 towns over. It is still too close for me. The local news never reported on the events of that week, at least not what happened to the residents of that trailer park. But the Weather Channel warns that another blizzard, possibly more severe than the last one, is on its way. We have stocked up on enough supplies to last us a month or even longer if needed. If you find yourself in an area where the storm hits, I urge you to do the same. And don't open your doors for anyone, especially not you.